This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 264 of the Countdown Podcast, your lockdown buddies here for your listening pleasure. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you do not have to. And today, because you are locked down and we are effectively locked down, Australia doing pretty well, which is nice, but our thoughts and prayers are with everybody else in the world who is struggling, the US, the UK. Hell, we may even have a listener or three in Spain and Italy. Our very best to you as coronavirus continues to rage and change the way that we live. Today, we are doing the top 10, last 10, : coronavirus. No, wait, lockdown edition.
Yeah.
Actually, if you put coronavirus in the title, more people might have listened to this.
Yeah, we'll just clickbait it. SEO, sorry. Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah, so it's just a top 10, last 10, where we count down 10 of the most recent films that we've seen but not spoken about on the show and rank them from worst to best. So we both guide you away from things which are absolute shit and towards things that we think are pretty goddamn awesome.
How did your list go this week, Paulie, or this episode?
This edition? I've got a good range, I think it's fair to say. I've got some absolute tripe at the bottom of my list, and I've got some surprisingly good films towards the top. So, yeah.
Right. Mine is mostly shit. not like bad to talk about shit, just like, I don't recommend till very late in the piece.
The last two, three of these we've done, it seems to be that's the case. You're making the bad choices that I normally make, clearly.
Yeah, they are. They're bad choices. No doubt. Yeah. So, you know. That's fine. I've been doing it for a while.
And by way of a sort of tease, I'll be talking about some of these films which have been released straight to streaming rather than going to the cinema. I don't know whether you'll be as well, Wayne. So got some...
A couple like that here.
Some pretty pertinent stuff that we're going to be talking about today. But we get there on the other side of a segment that kicks off every show and we call The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
And let's hear from the mailroom. Polly, what did we get?
Well, first of all, from top-level patron and wonderful supporter of the show, Adam Allure, we had one of the more disturbing threads that's ever been put together in our Facebook listener community. Link is in the show notes if you're not part of it. Get on board with hundreds of other people, and you know, of which about 40 or 50 of them actually regularly contribute. But Adam somehow had some app, which I should be able to find here what it's called and give it its due credit. Duplicat is the app. And Duplicat allows you to basically map people's faces that you know or through Facebook or whatever onto GIFs that exist from films.
Of so other people.
This is what Adam did, and he put Wayne and I's face on a number of different examples. So if I'm like Tom Holland in Endgame or Infinity War, I think it is. Wayne looking wonderful from a film. I don't know what it is, but it's like some old Asian film where you're a... Maybe it's monkey. I don't know. It looks amazing how good that is.
I think it might be Kill Bill. I'm not sure.
Oh, yes. It probably is Kill Bill. Is it Hatanzo?
Yeah. No, it was not Hattori Hanzo, but the other guy.
Incredible. Wayne is Bruce Lee. Just Wayne is James Bond. There's some really hilarious stuff.
Me as the Asians look kind of like you could see, like it's slightly less munted. But me as James Bond, I look totally munted on that one. Which is sad. And also
me as Forrest Gump, which was clearly designed to upset me and worked. Well done, Adam. Well played.
Well, I looked like I had eyeshadow on, so I'm interested in that. What are you going to do? Guyliner.
Wonderful effort there. Thank you, Adam, for that. It's great to get some nice very work, creative mate. Feedback.
Nice work.
And then last week's vote, then 3-all. We are on the year, Wayne, from episode 263 coming into that one, top 10 TV villains list. And it was, I think they've all been shellacking. No, one was really close. We've had one out of the seven races so far this year been very, very close. This one was another shellacking. 18 votes to you, 50 to me.
That is huge. Yeah, much bigger than last week.
That said, as is often the case, the people who did vote for you were quite vocal in the comments, so it looks way more misrepresented. And the other way around as well. So I'm a
big fan of pity, let me tell you.
When I've only got 10 or 12 votes, I get the same thing that all 10 or 12 of them have written why they felt the need to justify voting for me. Paul Murphy said, got to be Wayne putting their Barry bad guy. Loved Barry and completely forgot about it. Adam Malou, as mentioned, both had great lists, but Wayne had my Lex Luthor, so got to vote him. Judy Dutra from the Shaken Not Nerd podcast did say Gus Fring won it for me. Stephen Kroon, again, on your side, said two really good lists, but Boyd Crowder, Vic Mackey, and Al Swearingen got Wayne my vote.
See, mine's like odd. Mine's like off-kilter. You're getting like Barry people in there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but then other people were down on you, like Philip Meany said, Wayne had Omar Little as a villain. WTF?
I don't get it. Does that mean he's not a villain? He's definitely a villain.
Nick Orton said, Wayne for Paula, sorry, but didn't know 50% of Wayne's list. So that's how off-kilter you were, sir.
Completely. I understand.
Glenn Sutherland said, it's a Fring thing. that was therefore a vote for me. Jonathan Kidd said, a vote for Paul despite his scoffing remarks about Omar. Oops, sorry, Jonathan. Blake Jarvis said, Wayne, your list dumbfounded me. And then you mentioned the caricature of a bad guy. You're on Onu Wayne.
I'm bewildered, but not that much.
And last comment I'm going to preserve for Trisha Lawler, who basically had an excellent, excellent rationale when she gave her list. When I heard Paul pick Gus when I was listening at work, I was like,
vindication!
No,
actually,
I remember.
I saw the GIF. Very, yep. Very happy about that. And David Power, top level patron of the show, one of the most frequent posters around these parts, said, Spike, what the actual fuck, Wayne?
I absolutely stand resolute, motherfucker.
Sorry. I think you need some help there.
I stand resolute, motherfucker.
Trust me.
When I do it, you
when
do
I,
it.
When I edit it, it will sound slick.
Yeah, I know. I knew. I knew the points. I knew the points.
That's it for this week's feedback. Thanks to everybody who gets back to us. And thanks again for Adam for the laughs during the week. They're all badly needed at this point in time. Let's put it that way.
Damn right.
All right. On the other side of this music cue, then, let's get into it. The Top 10 Last 10 Lockdown Edition. The Top 10 Last 10 Lockdown Edition.
Nice one.
Is the subject of this week's countdown. We already know what that is. We'll let you know when we cross the divide between shit and good. Who wants to lead away, Wayne?
I want you to lead away.
I will lead away this week then. My number 10 is an absolute stinking pile of turd. It's so bad, it offended me, but and it pains me a little bit because it is a horror film. Shock.
Huge, huge shock.
This is the remake/reboot/sort of sequel to The Grudge.
Oh.
That was released at the start of this year, and it was initially on our list of films to review, and then I saw the reviews come out, and I dumped it uber fast. It's directed by Nicholas Pesky, who is a bit of an indie darling for a couple of films that he's made, which were both fine films. This version of The Grudge, I can't quite decide what it is, because it can't decide what it wants to be.
Wait a minute. It was the original one, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
That was the American remake of Ju-on The Grudge out of Japan. So this is a J-horror film. And it basically involves a house where a violent murder has taken place during the grip of rage becomes cursed. And if you walk into that house, the curse follows you until it kills you. Normally in the form of one of the ghosts of the people who were killed during said murders, if that makes any sense at all.
I've encountered a fart like that.
It has...
Seriously, you can't shake it.
Shit. Okay.
Oh, is that why you said this?
All of your arguments are like my asshole, man.
Oh, God. Yeah. Sorry. Just took me there. Go,
anyway,
please.
Point
go
being, I completely lost my train of thought. Thank you. Sorry. Thank you for that. This film is just garbage. That's all I want to say. Like, it makes reference to something that happened. I can't remember if it happened. I think it happened in the Sarah Michelle Gellar or the sequel one, and kind of follows on from there. But it just treads the same path over and over. And it tries to be really clever by mixing up the timelines, which the original Ju-on did to much better effect. And it has that iconic sound effect that goes, I got to do it. Hang on.
Okay, go on. Do you want to hear this?
I got to work it out. Here we go.
That just sounds like you sucking my dick.
I'm not even doing it well. That's the worst part.
That's what I said.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. I was going to cut that, but now I can't. That was too good a joke.
Nice one.
Well played, sir. It's a terrible, terrible film. It's not at all scary. It has a couple of nice shots, and that's all that elevates it. And there's one creepy scene in it that kind of made me go, okay, nah, it's terrible. Fucking piece of shit.
Sounds like Paul won't be keeping a grudge. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no, so, Paul will be holding a grudge.
He'll be holding
against
it,
against his whole fucking franchise.
Over the bin.
Okay, that's my number 10, The Grudge.
No problem. My number 10 was, okay, so I imagine Netflix is everyone's friend right about now, or your preferred streaming service, but in my case, it was Netflix I was watching, and I'm like, hey, there's a new Ben Affleck movie out. I like Ben Affleck. He was Batman. I'm going to watch this movie.
What's it called?
It's called The Last Thing He Wanted. And it's on Netflix now, okay? And it's sold as a Ben Affleck and Anne Hathaway film.
Oh, God, this film is supposed to be garbage.
Dude, you have no idea. First of all, Ben Affleck's in it for about 10 seconds, all right? Yeah, the story is about... Sense. Yeah, well, it's about Elena McMahon, a reporter for The Washington Post, who quits a job covering the 1984 states, like, obviously set in the 80s, presidential election to care for her dad. After her mother's death, and in this weird turn of events, she inherits his position as an arms dealer for the U.S. government in Central America.
Of course she does.
Right. Now, that all sounds very, very interesting, if you ask me, but bloody hell, it's not. This movie is full of, like, it's very tedious, just in general, but it has a lot of voiceovering, some very dankly lit scenes and weird filters. Anne Hathaway is doing her best, but the writing is just, it's like slightly annoying. That's the type of bad it is. Like, it's just a bit shit.
So, but it's number 10, and it's only slightly annoying. And I don't believe I'm just talking about
the writing. You don't like Anne Hathaway?
I fucking hate her. She's one of my most hated actors. I don't know.
She's great.
She's, I don't know. She comes across as smarmy and better than everyone in every film that she picks to be in. Even the downtrodden ones, she's like,
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Willem Dafoe is doing a pretty good job in his role, but again, the characters and the writing is just annoying. So it's like, at one stage I was like, I can't decide whether the writing or the directing sucks more. It is just pure ass because you don't know what's going on the whole time. And let me tell you this, people, it does have a titty bonus, but it is the most not enjoyable titty bonus you ever experience.
You know me.
I'm not gonna shut up.
Weedy breasts and all logic flies out the window.
I'm surprised I didn't elevate it to your number 3.
Again, it is the least enjoyable titty bonus ever. If you've seen the film, you know what I mean, and I'm not going to say any more about it, but it's not anything you can actually sort of enjoy. So there you are. This movie is the worst thing I've seen in years. It's so bad. I was so bored. I actually almost shut it off.
Worst thing you've seen in years? Hold on. So this is a contender for worst of 2020 then?
Maybe if you're the type of people who keep track of shit.
Remember what
I say? Yes, absolutely. You might think that. I don't know. But it's so inconsequentially like... The thing is, it's not offensively bad, like cats say. It's it's just bad.
So. Cats may get that very strange kind of pass because it came out at the very arse end of 2019, so we didn't, you know what I mean? But if it was released January 1st here, you can lock it down now as the worst film of the year.
That one is just like, it's like profoundly bad.
Yeah. All right. It sounds terrible, and I was not moved to watch it after reading a couple of reviews, so I'm glad confirmed. My number 9 is a film I'm very sad. No, I'm not very sad. I'm just slightly miffed that it was so shit. It's one that's good for the kids, but if you are an adult, steer the fuck well clear. It's Trolls World Tour.
What the fuck is this shit? What are you watching this shit for? Trolls World Tour? What is it about?
I watched it with my daughter, and I guess she was engaged enough to want to finish it.
Oh, wait, is that a kid's show?
Yeah,
is that the Trolls with the hair?
Yeah, the Trolls with the Hair.
I thought it was like some horror movie.
So you'll never see it.
Okay, fine.
No, Trolls World Tour horror movie.
I know! I'm like, what the fuck is he watching now? This motherfucker's watching a fucking World Tour horror movie? What?
We had Troll, then we had Troll 2, which is one of the worst films of all time. Now we've had Troll 3, Trolls World Tour. That is Wayne's World.
To me, it makes complete sense that you would watch something called that.
Just directed by someone named Walt Dorn. It looks stars. All the people back from the first one, mostly anyway. No Russell Brand this time.
People?
But Anna Kendrick, Justin Timberlake, James Corden, Kelly Clarkson, Sam Rockwell gets a small bit in it as well. Mary J. Blige. Oh.
Do they sing a lot?
Yeah, fuck, do they sing a lot? Oh my god.
Okay, now any of the songs good?
No, like it's mostly reworkings of popular pop tunes. And
I see.
The storyline of this one is the trolls recognize it because they all like pop music. It turns out there are like trolldom was divided into different kingdoms and they were all sort of kept hidden from each other. Like one's into rock and one's into funk and one's into country. And so, of course...
Okay. It's actually okay.
The problem with the storyline's okay. the execution of it's terrible. The animation's okay as well. I think some of the animation is actually quite eye-catching and pretty good. But Justin Timberlake's character is completely sidelined in this film. He barely rates a mention at all, really. It's all about Anna Kendrick and the leader of the rock group, because the rock ones are the villains in this film. They're trying to make everyone into liking rock.
Well, rock is the devil, as you know.
Well, I should have been totally behind this film because rock is the way, but... It's fucking awful. It's not funny almost at all. I think I chuckled twice the entire film. Whereas the first one, as painful as it was, because it was very cutesy and very kid-focused, had some laughs. This one just falls flat in its face in that department. Yeah. And so I really did not enjoy my time here at all.
Let me ask you, did your daughter enjoy it?
Let's put it this way. She's not asked to watch it again.
There you go.
She really likes something. She wants to watch it again immediately. So yeah, I think she was about it, and I was less than that. This is a complete fail and one of the worst films I've seen in the last couple of months.
All right. Nice one. Now, you're going to hear on my list a few obviously bad choices, okay? Like when I say this next one, you're going to go, why'd you watch that?
I won't take a drink of my beer then until you've announced it.
Okay. This is a movie called True Memoirs of an International Assassin. It is on Netflix. And it's... Do you know what I'm talking about?
Star Kevin James?
Kevin James!
You are a fucking moron.
What happened? I don't know if it autoplayed. I don't know what happened. But I was looking at James Bond movies and that one came up. And I'm like, you know what? Why not?
What are you, a fucking moron?
Here's why not.
Here's why not, yeah.
Yeah. So it basically, Kevin James is this like would-be author. He works in an office, but he wants to be an author. And he writes this fucking spy novels where the fictional character is actually him. And he does all this spy shit like capping people and saving women and stuff like that. Now, I'll tell you this, okay? It actually does not skimp on the violence. For a movie like this, it's like, bang, bang, bang. Oh, that's kind of harsh, okay?
What? No.
That's right. It's actually there. Now, I'm not... First of all, it's number 9, so I'm clearly not recommending it. And I'm not saying go watch this. But I will tell you this. It looks and feels like a real movie. It does not feel like an Adam Sandler and
Whoa, hold on.
That's right. It's not like Ridiculous Six or The Do-Over or any of those Netflix Sandler movies, right? Which is this the same, but this is actually, the script is more complex than it needs to be. Like, it's surprisingly plot-driven. I'm not saying it's good. It's never eye-rollingly funny or blatantly, you know, it's just okay for what it is. But still don't watch it.
But if it's okay for what it is, that means everything above this is better than okay. But you said it's way late till you recommend.
No, because I still didn't like it. I still didn't enjoy it or was I happy with my time there. It was just not as bad as that you would expect. Basically, it's an Adam Sandler movie without Adam Sandler in it, but it's not that. It's better than that, but it's still shit.
Okay. All right, yeah. Let's, I would never have watched this movie in a pink fucking
fit. No. It was kind of
this like... lockdown will have to go on for a good 2 or 3 years before I find myself watching that one out of choice, so...
Occasionally, I play a game of movie chicken with myself. And I go, I bet you, how long are you going to watch this one for? And I go, oh, 10 seconds. You know? But this one, I kind of went all the way through. I said, fuck it, I'm already here. I may as well talk about this
so
one.
So, therefore, the movie won, is what you're saying.
The movie definitely won. But again, if you're hearing a hint of respect, it's because it's like, but at least it didn't make me shut it off in disgust. Mm. That's pretty good for a shitty Netflix movie, right?
So well, there you go. Speaking of films I expected to shut off in disgust and films that you shat on from a great height last year, my number 8 is Elizabeth Banks's Charlie's Angels.
Oh, mate, you saw it. Fantastic. Please tell me all about
it. It's certainly not a good film, and I'm not going to defend it, except for, I think, a couple of plot beats, which were pretty good. I would suggest, and that's why it elevates it up to here at 8. And if you want to give a star rating, I'd say it's a 2-star film because the action is terrible. Really badly shot.
Yeah.
I will totally agree with that. And I think even worse than that, the attempts at comedy are so ham-fisted. I was oh my God. There was a moment in an exchange in this film which basically has Elizabeth Banks calling out Ben Affleck's Batman for being shit. I'm like, what fucking superior horse did you ride in on?
Exactly. I don't know why it like, how did you find what's her name Vampire Girls performance?
Kristen Stewart, she's fine. Kristen Stewart. All the girls are fine in the
She's actually fine. They are fine. It's the movie that's shit.
Yeah. The movie they're in is weird and tonally sort of all over the shop, and it's very very girl power, which I want to totally acknowledge as not being clearly I'm not the target audience. I think you said that at the time as well.
Yeah, same
but
thing.
But I don't think it's as bad as the critics said. I honestly don't. Like I think it's really, really average, and the comedy failings and the action shooting drops it low. But I don't think it's reprehensible, almost like you said, and a lot of critics have said too.
Did you notice the scene where the Charlie's Angels walk into a really elaborate nightclub?
Yeah.
And then they all start dancing, like, with everyone else?
That's right.
Yeah.
I'll be 100%. I was doing something else same time. I was finishing a
puzzle. Of course you were. Well, you were not looking at your puzzle.
I was watching, doing something. So maybe I did miss that moment.
Okay, so what they walk in and they just start dancing in unison with
the people. I remember
you
saying that, actually.
Yeah, and there's nothing. That's the end of the scene. It's like, wait. What was that? It was just shit like that happens in it. That's, you know, not as bad as... Okay, so...
But did you catch me unawares with a plot development that did shock me, that it caught me unawares, if I can put it that way? So,
yeah. Yes. That, I know exactly what you're talking about. And frankly, that wasn't bad. That was, if there's anything good about this movie, it's that and that character. So there you go.
Yeah. So, but it's not good. And I'm certainly not recommending it. I'm just saying it's not as bad as a lot of people have said. So that's why it's number 8 for me, Charlie's Angels.
Nice. Okay, well, my number 8 is a movie you have previously talked about, and I chose to give a go to. Jumanji, The Next Level.
This film is fine, you asshat.
I know! You thought it was fine! All right, people. So I remember what you said about the movie, and you said, because you usually hate Kevin Hart, and now you said Kevin Hart was good in this because he was doing
Danny Glover. I did acknowledge.
Right? And then The Rock is doing Danny DeVito.
And
so,
he's terrible.
And I thought he was fine. He was as good as Kevin Hart's Danny Glover.
Stop it.
Come on. He was moving here's the problem with the movie, right? I thought The Rock and Kevin Hart were doing such good jobs of emulating the two lead actors that it annoyed the shit out of me. Because one, Danny DeVito, I like his work, but he's a disgusting little man. It's not necessarily like
it. If a film's doing a good job of it, you can't mark it down for that.
Not if the effect of it is not what they were going for. You know what I mean? Like, it may be.
I concede your point there. Yeah. If it didn't work that way for you, whereas it did for me.
Exactly.
Kevin Hart, like, Danny Glover, perfect.
That was good. Now, here's the thing. Danny Glover, here's the thing I can't stand in the world is slow talking. People who talk really, really slow.
Hang on.
What the hell are you? No!
Oh, my God.
Are so you saying, Wayne?
No! Then you play the sound.
I should have played the what you just said here.
No, Dick Face, you should never have done that.
Are you trying to tell me that you, of all people, doesn't like people talking like
So wait a minute, wait a minute. I don't know what you're doing here, if you're giving me shit about it or whatever, but yes, if you're calling me an impatient prick, I most definitely am.
I'm also saying you talk really fast, and I can talk fast, but you talk me under the table, motherfucker.
I talk loud and fast, and it doesn't necessarily make sense. But hey, you know, as a result, probably that's it. So Danny, you know, Glover doing the stone talk gave me the shits a bit. They joke about it, but that's what it is. Also, this shit is 2 hours long. It's 2 hours. It's almost 2 hours long. Like, that's a long
what
time.
Shit, man. Every film's fucking 2 hours long that comes to the cinemas these days.
I didn't mind a bit of Karen Gillan. Didn't mind, you know, it was just an odd sort of. I mean, it's a cash grab. I don't mind that either. I just thought to myself, this wasn't for me. But I think you defended it to validate.
Oh, okay, but 3 stars. What would you score it? And B, when you say you didn't mind a bit of Karen Gillan, what didn't you mind about her?
Fuck off, and you know, all right?
You know me. I see a pair of
shut up, you fucking asshole. Breasts,
and
like
all
an
logic flies out the window.
Fucker. What the fuck? Fuck ass bitch. Okay. Okay, now we're not talking about this anymore. I don't want you crowbarring any more bullshit in here.
Sorry, I think we broke each other from over there. What would you give it? What would you give it as a score?
Because
you're not recommending it.
Yeah, 55.
Oh, well, I gave it 62, so it's not that far difference, but yeah. For me, that's a recommend.
Not for me. Okay,
Fair enough. My number 7 is a film which had to be reviewed, and I'm a little bit heavy on the horror film. Shut up, Wayne.
There's a joke. Go on.
This particular episode, my number 7 is a film called Countdown.
So someone made a gag about this. Like, we should do this show.
Yeah, I think Duty from Shaking Not Nerd was totally all over us to cover this one, because why wouldn't we? And I thought, let's press play this.
Sounds like we're about to hear
a no-name named Justin Deck, and stars a whole bunch of no-names. And it basically follows an app which kills you. Now,
what?
The app, you download this app and you press on it, how long till you die. And if you're someone who dies in a relatively short period of time, then it starts this countdown clock. Well, everyone gets a countdown clock. But if you are someone who it's soon to be, then you start seeing shit, like visions of something coming
at
you.
Wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you wrote a short story. That was a lot co-host. Like...
I take it everything I've ever said about you, ever. Now, you may not believe this at home, ladies and gentlemen, but I did not prompt Wayne at all on that.
No, no. You didn't.
And he's just got a pass for the last 12 episodes, all the stupid shit he's done on that basis alone. So
I remember the name of the story. It was called Death Day?
It was called Death Day.
It was, wasn't it, right? Paul yeah, wrote, so. And I read the whole thing. He hand wrote it as well. Right?
I hand wrote it, then I typed it out afterwards, because that's how long ago I wrote. I wrote a story about a computer program which predicted your death. This film owes a debt of gratitude to my story.
Is that
and
so?
I will guarantee you this, my story was fucking better. If really? Only because it takes about 5 minutes to read and doesn't run for 90 minutes.
So did this thing kind of go that way?
Very similar. Very
I even
similar.
Remember the end of your story. I remember the end. So,
mine,
you know.
Mine, it was obviously supernatural. In my story, the the protagonist lives past his projected death date by a second or two, and then the computer program back on his computer computes an error and says apologies for the error and then shows the actual death date. Which that's I thought was pretty damn funny.
No, it's. I remember going, oh, wow, so does that mean the computer killed him? And you said, that's the fucking thing that you got to ask.
I'm yeah, like, oh, well, you've got to work it out from there.
Nice
yeah.
one, mm-hmm. nice one. And is this one like anywhere near that clever?
In fact, it's so fucking dumb, this movie. There's a moment where they work out that, you know, by talking to some expert fucking occultist, if you stay within this circle that I draw on the ground, then you'll be safe, right? It can't get you.
Okay.
It will try and lure you out, the movie has established. And so we see a character get lured out despite what? The fact it fucking knows what is going to happen. I'm like,
that's stupid.
It wouldn't matter if the person, I don't know. It wouldn't matter if Catherine Tremell was standing outside a circle, you know, basically uncrossing and crossing her legs again.
If hey, Paul, could you help me with this?
Yeah, if I knew that this supernatural thing was going to kill me if I stepped outside, I wouldn't step outside a circle. How fucking dumb are movie characters?
In the movie, is the app doing the thing by the luring, or is it supernatural?
I think the app, the implication of the movie is the app is not just reading the play. The app is, now you're unlucky, bam, I'm going to kill you. And so this demon, which is using the app to get to people, then starts killing people.
So we've got ghost coders and developers now.
Pretty much.
Okay, there's a Silicon Valley of fucking
it's,
demons.
It's dumb as fuck. and probably only gets to number 7 on my list because A, it's called Countdown, and B, it ripped off my story. So there you go.
Ah, okay. Well, speaking of entrepreneurs that do shit with blood, yeah, it's another one. My number 7 is a documentary called The Inventor, Out for Blood. Have you ever heard of a company called Theranos, Paul?
No.
Oh, man. This is huge. Now, I heard about this all before this documentary, and it's very interesting. Okay. Basically, there was a CEO named Elizabeth Holmes, and she started a company called Theranos, which promised to deliver like a product that can test a few drops of your blood in a tiny vial for like $20.
I have read something about this somewhere.
Yeah, and you can get any number of, like, it can basically, you send it to them, and they tell you, they diagnose everything about you, and you can. The idea is that you get a running score of your health because you do it regularly instead of just whenever you go to the doctor. This company, great idea, and that's what the whole world thought. So they floated the company, and it became a $10 billion company. All right, half of those shares were owned by Elizabeth Holmes, which is this. She's a 25-year-old CEO, I guess, like entrepreneurs. And what's weird about this show? First of all, she was lying about the whole thing. She said it could do this, it couldn't do it. They kept on doing things. She started bloody well. She was interviewed by Bill Clinton and fucking all these people. Like, she got this massive profile, and she couldn't stop lying. And she just kept on saying, nope, it's fine, it works, it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And the whole company knew it, right? Anyway, what's interesting about this woman is she is so weird. The first time you look at her, she's like blonde hair and like you might think, oh, she's cute or whatever. The second
you
she opens her
me.
Mouth. Yeah, I knew you'd do that. I knew you'd fucking do that.
Breasts, and all logic flies out the window.
Well, no, not really, because the second she opens her mouth, right, you notice she speaks in a almost comically baritone voice where you're like, she talks like this. And it's like, whoa, what's that? Also, she wears turtlenecks like Steve Jobs because she totally idolizes him. And I think she may have like made her voice like him a bit.
Okay, that's weird.
It's really weird. And it's the downfall of that whole thing. Very interesting show. The only issue with the actual documentary itself is the guy could not secure an interview with her. he's always doing interviews, like past interviews, showing her stuff, and then that sort of thing.
Okay, so she never got on to defend herself.
But
I think I read somewhere that she was taken down or had multiple suits against her.
She's still fighting him. So yeah, but yeah, there you go. Interesting show. The Inventor, out for blood.
So have we now crossed into recommend?
Nope.
Because why? Because they didn't get an interview with her? It sounds like you're talking about it positively.
Yeah, right. I do recommend this one. If you like this type of thing, you do.
Right, fair enough. Yep. My number six is also where I start to recommend, because my number six is the second to last film I saw in the cinema, courtesy of an advanced screening, thanks to Natasha Louise.
Nice.
Onward, directed by Dan Scanlon. It's the new Pixar film. It's out now to stream. I think it's actually, as of tomorrow, Australian time, out on Disney Plus, but it's been out in America for a couple of weeks on their version of Disney Plus. It's mid-tier. It's mid-tier Pixar. That's probably the best way to describe it. In this particular world, it's kind of like a world that has evolved from D&D world into, or fantasy world, into current times, but magic has been lost. So imagine a world where, kind of like a sequel to Bright. You remember that one with Will Smith and Joel Edgerton. Right, so it's current times, but the magic is gone away. Elves and whatever else, and centaurs and a manticore, like they all sort of cohabitate in a world with cars and cities and all our modern tech and whatever.
But the magic is gone, you say?
Magic is gone. And these two brothers, played by Chris Pratt and Tom Holland, they discover this spell that their dad, who passed away when Chris Pratt's character, who's the older brother, was only 7 or so, or 5 or 6 or something, and Tom Holland is 4 or 5 years younger, was barely, never, doesn't have any memories of his dad. The dad had some way to tap into magic, and he gives the spell to his sons, and they cast the spell, and it fucks up, and dad's only a pair of legs. And so it's them taking the pair of legs on this journey to complete the spell through this mythical kind of land, and it becomes like a quest. And it's clever, but it takes a long time to set up its world. And it does eventually become Pixar emotional, but it takes a long time to get there. The last act of this movie is fantastic. The first act is really, really dry and boring. So it's kind of just got to hang in there with the film. The longer it goes, the better it gets. It ends up being a recommend for me, but you might be 20 minutes or 30 minutes in this film just going, oh my God, especially as an old AD&D nerd like me.
Yeah.
Even I had trouble.
I would think exactly.
Even I had trouble till halfway through the film to really get on board with it. So there you go.
And did you watch it with your kid?
Yeah. I watched it with the kid and one of her friends and her friend's dad. And everyone came out of there going, yeah, pretty good, pretty good. No one came out of there raving about it. And again, my daughter hasn't said, can I watch that one again? So
yeah, that's fine.
It's absolutely worth
it. She hung in there? That's something?
Yeah.
All right. Well done. My number six is also a documentary. I seem to be doing that a bit here. But this is my two. This is a well-known documentary called The Great Hack. And not to get too entrepreneur-y, Facebook-y on you, but this is a show that will probably, if you're ever thinking about deleting your Facebook account, this will be the reason that you pull the trigger, because it's a comprehensive doc on the Cambridge Analytica scandal, in which like the slimy British consulting firm mined behavioral information from like millions of users to create targeted political ads and basically made Brexit happen by hitting that. And they prove kind of how they did that and how it was illegal. And what it's really kind of asking you is,
Does it touch on the American political race? Yes, talks about that.
And basically how this could, that company has now been decimated, like because the Congress shut them down, all sorts of shit happened. But it is well made. It is a bit like Minority Report with a lot of like, you know, like sort of like visuals and lots of like panels on the screen and that kind of thing. But it's quite effectively put together. But it does make you sort of understand that you can't avoid digital, and it kind of, basically, the question it sort of asks you is that, is psychographic tools, are they a weapon? You know, and that's what people are doing here. They've now actually harnessed the social media landscape to actually be able to target people who are going to think a certain way and turn them onto your way of thinking, make them vote a certain way. So it's really kind of, it was cool. It was cool, I must think. So, but yeah, do you actually put a webcam cover on your laptop, Paul?
I don't, but I only ever use my laptop when I'm working, so I'm not doing anything wrong.
What if like it's open and you have multiple screens like me, and then like you're jerking off, and then someone turns
to my laptop is only for work. Could I be any more clear than that?
But it could be open in the room and you put it aside while
you do something
else. The cam
you're looking at me through now, I unplug the moment that we stop recording. Okay.
But that's it. What about your phone, Paul? What about your phone?
I don't masturbate with my phone, Wayne.
I mean, that's really about masturbation in general, but what I'm saying is I do use webcam covers.
Okay, sure.
I saw Snowden. I know what's up.
If you
want to
access my phone right now, you'll see a really great shot of a cord in the corner of said screen and then my ceiling, because that's what it does. It points straight up in the wall.
How about your iPad, Paul? I bet your iPad's facing you right now.
It is, again.
Oh!
If you want a shot of my chest, look at it. It's magnificent.
Hey, who doesn't, motherfucker?
I'm wearing long sleeves today for the first time, so you can't tell just how, or you can't tell as unbuff as I am.
Gun showing on today. All right.
We have turned the corner, by the way. It's gotten coolish here in Perth, finally, so... Long sleeves it is.
Here we go.
All right.
That sounds
very interesting. Sounds like a good documentary, and obviously
if you're digging this stuff, I do recommend that. Yes.
Okay, nice. My number five, clearly also recommend because I am past that point, is Netflix's new Spanish, I don't know what to call it, thriller, horror, drama, The Platform. Have you heard of it, Wayne?
I've not heard of this. Go on.
It's directed by Galda Gutzlor-Erutia. There you go. You, Dan and Caleb,
nice
from Netflix
one.
And Swirl podcast. Or if you prefer, The Platform in Spanish is El Hoyo.
I do prefer. Go on.
And this is a film which is basically an allegory for trickle-down economics. So in this film, there is a prison of some description, which is however many levels deep, no one knows. And this beautiful, sumptuous feast is placed on this platform in the middle of the cell, at level zero, call it that, and then drops down to level one. And the people on level one, two people per level, get to have their fill for however many minutes it is. I can't remember if it's 5 minutes or whatever. And then it drops down to level two and drops down to level three and drops down and drops down and drops down and drops down. So there is a hole in the middle of this cell and you can see down, straight down to basically hell and all the people further and further down. So it follows this guy who volunteers to go in and be part of this. It's never really made clear whether this really is a prison or an experiment or whatever, because he wants to get some kind of fucking diploma, which is absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Dude, this sounds weird.
Yeah, after 1 month, you're moved from your area randomly into a different level. So he volunteers for 6 months and it follows his journey through here. And it is weird. It's well made.
Sounds
it's kind
really
of very,
weird.
Very cubish, right? That's the most
easy
comparison to make. And the production value is relatively low because it doesn't have to be huge in this particular world, but it's very effective. My major qualm and why it drops down to here at five is I really dislike the ending. I really hate what it did. And I won't spoil it. It's brand new. It's on Netflix. Yeah. Anyone can watch this. But it was not clear what it was going for. And for me, it dropped massive points for that reason. Like, it almost wanted to have its cake and eat it too, but it makes no sense. So,
but it was good up to then.
Yeah. Yeah. It's 95 minutes. Easy watch. Well worth the time. Check out the platform.
Okay. It sounds really high concept.
Yeah, so, it is.
Okay.
I did it not one sentence, but in small enough number of sentences anyway. So, yeah, but it's effective allegory at that level. And if we were to do a top 10 allegorical films, it would probably be in mine.
Okay, nice. Nice one. My number five is a movie that I stumbled upon and I saw the trailer for it and I thought to myself, this looks like a hella quirky, somewhat stylish, offbeat kind of drama thriller. It's called Thoroughbreds. Have you ever heard of this before?
Yeah, I have. I've seen it. I disliked it immensely.
Okay, interesting. Now, it's about these two teenage girls, Lily and Amanda, who live in an upper-class area of, Connecticut. And they used to be friends a long time ago, but they grew apart, and they're sort of reconnecting now.
A long time ago.
What song is that?
We used to be friends.
Oh, I remember now.
Hot damn!
Yeah, I'm glad we went there.
Sorry.
No, it's all good. It's all good. All good. All good. So she's, yes. Long story short. What's that? What's that now? Oh, is that from that song?
The joke was so bad first time, I had to come back for a second round trip.
Sometimes you go swipe again and maybe it works. We don't know if it happens.
It's like that Simpsons gag where Sideshow Bob steps on all the rakes over and over.
And then it gets less funny than funny again. I know what you mean. Anyway, this movie is basically about these two friends. One of them is really despondent and sort of fucked up because she's a bit fingered and doesn't feel emotions and stuff. And the other one convinces her to try and to kill her stepfather, who she hates. And what is the deal about this film is it's a mega, mega slow burn. It's the first thing to know, all right? It is really, really And I was expecting something a bit quirkier and a bit more stylish. And I would say that it's not for everyone, but at the end of the film... No, I would say it's not for me either, but at the end of the film, I ended and I went, oh, okay, so that happened. And then I started thinking about it more and I was like, hey, that movie sort of duped us. Like, it actually was... And obviously you didn't think this, but the movie seems to be playing it one way. I'm not going to spoil it, but it seems to be playing it one way the whole time. And at the end, you realize, oh, shit. The whole time, it was actually this other person who was actually... A shock, but not shocking, because it's such a slow-paced movie. I oddly did not mind it, and I don't know why, because normally I'd crap all over it, but I...
Yeah, it does shock me that you like this one, to be honest.
Yeah, it's something that I liked about it. They do interesting things with the soundtrack and shit. It's like it's sort of made in a kind of good way. But
You're in good company, though. I think most people did like this movie. I am one of the exceptions to the rule, so yeah.
It's definitely not for everyone, I'll tell you that right now. So on some level, if I recommend this, I recommend it to very few people. People who like Lost in Translation and shit, like slow burn movies, that kind of thing.
Okay. All right. My number four is a film that we were probably going to do this week or last week before coronavirus interfered with the way of the world. And it's called The Hunt, as directed by Craig Zobel.
I'm intrigued about this.
Watch it. There you go. There's my two-word reply. Watch it. It is a bizarre experience. It's not entirely successful, but I put it on with my fiance and we got 1 minute 30 in and she said, turn it off. I can't do this. It's too
really?
Gory. So it's extremely gory. It's very gory. It's very over the top. And it basically follows 12 strangers who wake up in a clearing and, you know, they've all got sort of like horse bridles, things in their mouth, so they can't speak and they're locked on and they start being hunted by a human. So it's a variation on The Most Dangerous Game, which is a classic film. I think it's a film. Variation on The Most Dangerous Game. And they start to get weapons and start to fight back and it goes from there. Mm-hmm. Now, what makes this film interesting is it's written by Damon Lindelof and Nick Cuse. And they have made this film, and it was very controversial when it came out. They've made this film kind of like a commentary on conservatism versus liberalism. And
really?
So the liberals are the hunters and the conservatives are the hunted. And it tries to occupy this ground between the two, which both neuters and makes the film more effective in a weird kind of way.
Is it like, because it sounds like Surviving the Game, that old Ice-T
movie. Yeah, it is like Surviving the Game, but it's a lot more... tongue-in-cheek, even though that film now doesn't stand the test of time, but that is the kind of ilk it's going for.
Okay, all right.
But imagine that the other way around. In that film, it's the rich people hunting a poor person, right?
Yeah.
And that's sort of happening here as well, but it's the rich people in this film are the corporate elite liberal sort of... They're the people who are minding their P's and Q's when they're talking about race and talking about classism and whatever. And the people that they're hunting are the rednecks. Put it that way.
But you think it's worthwhile?
Yeah, I do. Like, it's for me. If it wasn't for the awkwardness, there's a couple of kick-ass scenes in it, and there's some really genuinely surprising moments. I won't say more than that. I'll say this. If you've read this book, and I don't think it'll be too many of our listeners, there's a book called Heroes, or The Heroes by Joe Abercrombie, who is one of my absolute favorite authors, and in this book, this big battle happens between, it's like a fantasy medieval type thing, between two sides. And one chapter follows all these characters. And it starts with character one who kills someone and then gets killed by character two. And then it follows character two who gets killed by character three. And then character three, you know what I mean? So it follows through the battle for about 50 pages like that to give you the implication of chaos and or the sense of how chaotic this world is. And The Hunt does something very similar. And it's really, really effective. So it got some really great moments, but overall it gets a little bit muted by tries to occupy its middle ground, not wanting to comment on anything. And it became this kind of rallying call for the gun violence in America. And so they canned its release in about September last year because of the shootings over there.
Really?
Yeah. And they didn't want to sort of be insensitive and whatever else. And so it was all the way out. I think it came out in the States just before coronavirus shut down theaters. So it had a couple of weeks in theaters. And now they released it as a streaming for everybody else, including us, which I think it was meant to release this week or last week in Australia.
So production-wise?
It's pretty high. And it does. Eventually, it comes to this woman who's awkward and weird, but is very effective at defending herself. I'll just say that. So
okay.
Good stuff.
Cool. No, I'm familiar. Okay, my number four is a movie we were going to do for the show, but then we decided not to. 21 Bridges.
Ah, oh, I cut that off my list late for Charlie's Angels.
Did you? Oh, it would have been
seven for me.
Okay, good call. So this is Chadwick Boseman, Sienna Miller, and J.K. Simmons. And I was kind of... I didn't know about this movie until Paul brought it to my attention. And then I realized it was directed by the Russo brothers, working with Chadwick Boseman. It's like kind of a Marvel thing.
No, they produced it. Did they direct it? Oh, they did direct it.
I thought they directed it. Looks to me like... Anyway, if they did, good job, because this movie is actually shot...
They produced it. Brian Kirk directed it.
Okay, sorry. But this movie... I think it actually looks... really nice. The city looks beautiful. It looks dark. It looks vast. It looks like there's a lot of these like cool tracking shots, and like the shootout sequences are handled very well, brutal and punchy. The movie is about basically this Chadwick Boseman is like a NYPD detective, and he gets thrust into this citywide manhunt for a pair of cop killers after uncovering this massive, huge kind of, you know, of course there's a bit of conspiracy and that thing going on as the night unfolds, but basically he closes all the bridges from Manhattan Island. There are 21 of them, and that's how he's got to find them in a night, basically, before they open it in the morning. So, first of all, one thing, go into this knowing as little as possible. Like, so what I told you, that's all. Don't go looking for a trailer. Don't do anything, okay? You'll like it more. Chadwick Boseman is doing some sort of, like, a New York-y accent, and is really, really good. I like, the way it's shot, but the issue with the film is that, even though it's well-made and well-acted, the story and the way it's presented to you winds up being kind of predictable, and you kind of there's no surprise or intrigue for you, because you kind of go, agree. This is how it's going to end, and it does. That's the thing that's wrong with this movie. Otherwise, it's actually made incredibly well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I guess just speaks to the quality of film you saw versus the quality of films I've seen in this top 10 last year.
Yeah,
it's very sleek. It's fine. I'm not sure why it was sort of... It wasn't shat on, but people just went, eh, about it. I think it's better than that.
Because you hear Marvel names and you expect Marvel satisfaction. That's what it is. I don't know.
Yeah, like I said, though, I think you thought Russo's directed it and they didn't. So
yeah, maybe that produced it, inflated
your opinion a touch.
Maybe.
But yeah, okay, so there we are. It would have been right beneath Onward for me had I been ranking it in my list. My number three is one of the oldest films we've ever talked about on the show. It's from 1949. It's White Heat, as directed by Raoul Walsh. And it stars James Cagney and Virginia Mayo and Edmund O'Brien. Have you ever heard of White Heat, Wayne?
Wasn't that your nickname in high school? I'm sorry. No, I
time
don't
for the next level. Forced laughing.
There's no forced laughing there, my friend. That is pure gold. Unlike your shitty sound drop.
No, this is a film. Sorry,
I have not heard of White Heat.
White Heat, it was in the IMDb top 250. I'm not sure it still is.
You said James Cagney, so obviously it's a classic.
Yeah, exactly. And he's the criminal. He's this psychopathic criminal who kills people while he's robbing trains and shit like that, and eventually gets caught and sent to prison. And an undercover police officer is put in there to become friends with him to find out where he's put the money, so to speak. And the film goes from there. And Virginia Mayo is his wife, the criminal's wife, who wants out from their relationship and is sort of trying to cozy up, so to speak, to one of his colleagues or confederates. And there's a lot of shit. And then there's mum shit going on as well, because he's really close with his mum, and his mum is like the planner in the gang and all that kind of stuff. It's pretty cool for a 1949 film, but I have this real soft spot for prison films. I really do. So,
because of your time with prison bitches? I don't know what. It's like...
So I wish I had to save the forced laughing button for now.
But this is an older film that you are giving... What position?
Three.
Four? Three.
Yeah, I really dug this one. I thought I was going to be bored as fuck, and I pressed it, and I'm like, oh, I'm intrigued, and I watched it all the way through.
Is it harsh or something? Was it a surprise? What's the deal? It's like, this is... Okay.
It's also long for a 49 film. It's 140 minutes, but I was never bored, so it's 3.5 stars. It's really, really good.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, nice one. What's it called again?
White Heat.
Of course. How could I forget? All right. My number three is the first time I used my Apple Plus TV fucking whatever that subscription is.
You have Apple Plus TV?
Well, I bought an iPad this year and they give it to you free for a year. So I would not have actually paid for it normally. But
God damn it. We just bought an Apple iPad. It hasn't arrived after 3 weeks.
What? Just go hook up, look on your thing, man.
You can't get them anymore because they're all sold out because everyone's in lockdown.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, we'll talk. We'll talk. But number three is a movie from there called The Banker. Now, this is a film that was mired in a bit of controversy because it was going to be... Basically, it's based on a true story of Bernard Garrett and Joseph Morris. They are two African-American entrepreneurs who sought to, like, financially empower Black Americans by buying homes in white neighborhoods for them to rent. And they offered loans to Black-owned businesses by starting a bank, the first Black bank ever. And they hire a white man to pose as the head of their company while they posed as janitors and actually ran the business. And it's got Sam Jackson, Chad... What's his name?
Oh, so it's not a documentary. This is a...
It's a dramatization of real events. So Sam Jackson, Anthony Mackie, and Nicholas Hoult. And unfortunately, this was going to be a movie that they actually had a lot... It ticked a lot of Oscar boxes, okay? It's about a minority oppression. It's a period piece. It's about, you know, whatever, whatever. But then they had to yank it from distribution because one of the producers got embroiled in a sexual harassment scandal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And they actually were going to... They actually had to yank it from release and only just came out sort of recently on the platform now as a result. Now, the film is actually really well played. And really, like, all the performances are excellent. Anthony Mackie, I used to not really think he was a good actor because I've heard he's a bit of a dick. But he actually does quite well here. And he actually is a good actor. And he makes for a believable everyman. But the problem is, it's actually a bit of a patchy show. It's everything, the production-wise looks great. The city looks great. The time looks great. But it doesn't grab you all the way to the end. It is not entirely, like, hugely entertaining, but it is... solid. It's a really solid film. So that's why it's my number three.
All right. Sounds the reasonable, banker. Despite the last part.
No, it's all right. It's just it drags a little in places.
Weirdly, then, we go from your film about disaffected African-Americans to my film about disaffected African-Americans, which tells you a lot about the way things were and perhaps are in America. Just Mercy. Directed by Destin Daniel Cretton and starring Michael B. Jordan, Jamie Foxx, Brie Larson, O'Shea Jackson Jr., and Rafe Spall, with a pretty great supporting turn by Tim Blake Nelson. Have you
What's
heard
it
this
about?
One,
Wayne? I have heard. You know what? I've only seen the trailer, the movie poster.
Watched it last night. Actually, watched it over two nights. We started late, so we had to finish it. So over the last couple of nights, the powerful true story of Harvard educated lawyer Brian Stevenson, who goes to Alabama to defend the disenfranchised and wrongly condemned to death, including a guy named Walter McMillan, a man sentenced to death despite evidence proving his innocence. This is one of those outrageously anger-producing films where it's 136, 137 minutes long and you spend a good proportion of this film just shaking your head. Even as, and I have to be clear here, even as a white person in the dominant culture, just shaking your head in horror at the way things were in the late 80s, early 90s in the States. Now, we are not without... issue here in Australia. I'm not pretending that for a second. I don't want to offend anybody. But when you see that there and you just... There's a moment in that film where my blood boiled. And this is a dramatization of events that happened 30 years ago-ish. Holy shit. The guy here, Brian Stevenson, he is an executive producer on a film. It's based on his novel or book of the same. And it's played by Michael B. Jordan. What an amazing person. Who Harvard educated, not... obviously super intelligent, but not from a very poor neighborhood, not from money, and decided he wanted to help people, and includes this particular gentleman. I will not spoil the film because it's not a big enough story to be obvious how it's going to play out, but geez, it led me down a road and I was feeling it. Let's put it that way. So
I am surprised. I did not actually, I didn't hear enough about this show. I didn't even know what it was about, but I am surprised you're putting it so high. Mm.
Courtroom dramas aren't always my thing.
When
they're played well, like this one is well worth seeking out. Please see Just Mercy.
Cool. Nice one. Now, by contrast, my number two, I have here what I think I'll call the manifestation of how I'm dealing with the lockdown. Okay. And that's basically chasing comfort viewing over any kind of self-examination or adventurous spirit. This is a stupid popcorn film. It is pure fluff, but I liked it and I had a good time. Sahara is the name of the movie. Okay.
What
so,
the
okay,
fuck?
Okay. I knew you'd have a problem with this. Everyone, Sahara is a 2005 film starring Matthew McConaughey, Steve Zahn, and what's that girl with the lips?
Bullshit. That's not her name. Just be clear.
Penelope Cruz. Penelope Cruz.
You mean Selma Hayek?
Light? Is that what you're saying? Nah, not at all. This is a movie. Yeah, so it's made from a Clive Cussler novel. He's a typical type of pulpy writer that Paul would hate.
Take it back.
So that's already gonna not like happen for it. Okay.
Oh my god, this film is garbage.
I know. Well, this is not. You know what? I'm saying this to you. It's my number two, but I don't recommend it to anyone but me. How's that? Because I'm not saying this is the second best film of the lockdown, not even close. And I don't even recommend it necessarily like to you people, but I enjoyed it the second... this is the second most enjoyable movie I've seen off the last 10, because I really liked it.
I can't help but think you fucked up the whole brief here, and we've done this...
Nope,
27
nope.
times.
I'm telling you that this is my favorite. This is my favorite. I enjoyed this, and so it goes higher. If I liked it, but I didn't think you'd like it, it wouldn't go lower. So, yes.
Inconceivable.
Shut up, you punk ass bitch. It's about Matthew McConaughey, and he's this sort of naval historian diver dude who actually goes and takes up, like, he finds shit that has sunk in the sand or in the sea for years and years and years. William H. Macy's in it, too. Yes. Anyway. It's rather than go into it, I will tell you that it involves helicopters, bad guys, choppers, blowing shit up. It's all that shit. Like, I liked the mood of this movie, and I think it had a lot to do with, like, I might have been a bit depressed and it picked me up. And I think it's actually a PG film. There's actually nothing offensive or edgy about this at all. But I really, really liked it. And I dug the shit out of it too. So
it's kinda like National Treasure.
It's not as bad as National Treasure in any way. This is a completely different movie. I did not know that this writer is like one of those Lee Childs, like Jack Reacher where he's got like this series of this character. I didn't know any of that shit. But I remember watching it going,
and this
I don't
was
know
meant
why.
To be the one that launched that, and you can tell how well it did.
Yeah, well, as I was watching, I think because it's all set on beaches and, like, sandy, but I don't know. You know me and colors in movies and like, color temperatures in movies. It has an effect upon
Watch
me.
Watch Jaws, motherfucker.
You know, Jaws? No, man! Then there's, like, people getting eaten and shit, man. It's not the same thing at all. This one here, I was watching, like, some harsh shit, like the fucking, like, the one with the two girls, the fucking Thoroughbreds one, and that bummed me out. And then it seemed to take a long time as well for the 90-minute movie to get over. Then I watched Sahara because I'm like, what's this one like? I always wondered. And I just became happy again. So that's what happened. It's my number two.
For a while now, I've been thinking I should add to the soundboard, drugs are bad, okay?
Not drug-related.
This fucking right? choice my, screams.
My, yeah, I have issues, but not like this. It's... yeah, it's great. I mean, I had a great time. I'm not saying it's great.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up then with our number ones. That's unbelievable at your number two. Holy shit. If I rank all of that with mine, it would be my number probably nine. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I'm going that way with, but I like this.
Speaking of my 10 through two and then revealing my number one, 10, The Grudge, The Remake, 9, Trolls World, Pua, 8, Charlie's Angels.
Are we doing that? Go ahead.
Here we are. 7, Poo Down, 6, Count Onward, 5, Platform, 4, The Hunt, 3, White Heat, 2, Just Mercy. Number one is a film that's very me, and I probably wouldn't recommend to you, Wayne, but I recommend to anybody who likes Assault on Precinct 13, the John Carpenter original. It's called VFW. It's directed by a guy named Joe Begos.
What is this?
It's a very low budget film basically set in this dystopian just future where a bunch of returned service veterans led by Stephen Lang are in there like their RSL, what we call it here in Australia, their club. And across the road, this bunch of drug dealers have taken over the neighborhood effectively. Someone steals from them and runs into their RSL, their VFW, which I can't remember what it stands for, but veterans from war
veterans.
Or whatever.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Okay, got it.
And throws themselves on their mercy, and they stand their ground and fight against the drug dealer and the hordes of drug users that they then throw at them, saying, you will get all the drugs you want.
Really?
It is incredibly violent, so over the top. It is fucking awesome. Stephen Lang is magnificent. So, you know who Stephen Lang is, right?
No.
Stephen Lang is the bad guy in Avatar.
Oh, yeah. Totally know him now.
And then on top of that, you add all these dudes who are like staples from 80s and 90s cinema, like William Sadler is in the film, Martin Cove, Fred Williamson from Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
Not Sex Machine, but the African-American dude. The big dude. He's
I know him. I know exactly who he is. Yep.
And Norm. George Wendt from Cheers.
What? Yeah. Norm's in this?
Yeah.
Norm!
And there's a young dude who's just come back from the war who's in it as well. And so it's them versus hordes of drug-addicted dudes just throwing themselves at them, trying to kill them because they want the next fix. So it's kind of like this zombie movie.
Is it like guns and shit?
Yeah, guns, weapons, whatever they can use. And it's just, like I said, so bloody and gory. It's such a good time. But it's only for that select few people who can handle that. Like, I would definitely never bother to show my fiance that. And anyone who falls into that sensibility of, I don't like violence, fucking skip it. But if you do, if you're on board for that, check out VFW.
Okay, so would I like it?
You wouldn't like it as much as me, but I think you'd find merit in it just from watching these old dudes kick ass, if I can put that way.
Yeah. I'm on board. I'm one of those guys now.
We are.
Okay, my 10-1 was 10 was The Last Thing You Wanted, which was also the last thing I wanted. Number 9 was... Enough of those. 9 was True Memoirs of an International. Number 8 was Jumanji, the next shit. Number 7, The Inventor, Out for Blood. 6, The Great Hack. 5, Thoroughbreds. 4, 21 Bridges. 3, The Banker. Number 2, Sahara.
Unbelievable.
And my number 1 is a Daniel Radcliffe joint called Guns Akimbo.
Oh, okay. It's on my watch list. Haven't seen it yet.
Oh, dude. So, guys, Guns Akimbo is about Miles, Daniel Radcliffe, a video game developer and internet troll who is hunted down by an organization called Schism. And because he posts some shitty comments on the Schism website, and everyone watches this. Schism is like this game where people are killing each other. It's like The Running Man a bit, where everyone watches on the internet and there's real people trying to kill each other. Okay. So he posts some shit to them. They find him, knock him out, and attach 2 guns to his hands with bolts. So when he wakes up, all he has is these gun hands, all right? And he now has to go up against Nyx, who is a female killer. She's at the top of her game. She is also Samara Weaving from frickin'...
Oh, yeah, yep.
Yeah, and I didn't recognize her until like 3 scenes in. Oh, shit, look at that. Anyway, this movie here is insane, man. I think it's a Kiwi production, just from what I've seen.
Right, I had no
idea. First of all, I really dig that Radcliffe does shit like this. He's like Swiss Army Man. And I was like, he's totally shaken off the Harry Potter thing. He's been doing it for years. Okay? For sure. So I like him. All right. The concept to me...
reminds me of a younger Elijah Wood.
Good point. Yes. But bigger. Like, this guy has... There's an actor called... Do you know who Ned Dennehy is?
Nope.
Okay. He's the bad guy named Richter. And the only problem with this movie... First of all, it's great. The action is really, really well done.
Is he any relation to the King of B?
I was just thinking that this
very
second.
Sadly passed away this week.
I know.
Brian Dennehy. Yep.
Looking at his face, you've definitely seen him before. He actually looks like an old director I had. But he's maybe. They're definitely both older white men. But the movie itself is pure action heaviness, and it's because it's rough. Like, the special effects are not, they're not ropey insofar as they tried to do something and failed. They're just sort of cheaper special effects. And you would think that would hurt it, but for some reason, because of the way the movie is, it's already rough, so you don't mind. It's clearly a lower production budget type movie, but it is really very good. Like, I really liked it. It's not going to teach you anything about life, but what's impressive about
it
is the action.
Does it entertain,
Wayne? Yes, yeah. It is consistent. It is consistent in its action and its, like, entertainment, I guess. So I say this is the shit. This is, like, the best movie I've seen in... Whatever, lockdown.
All right, there we are. That's the end of the top 10, last 10 lockdown edition. Obviously, we don't do honorable mentions, but I'll be checking that one out for sure. Maybe you
Guns
will
Akimbo.
As well. And it doesn't sound like, to be honest, Guns Akimbo and VFW are that far apart in terms of...
It doesn't a bit.
...what we are checking out and recommending at this point in time.
There you go. Mindless action and fun.
Yeah, exactly. And in the case of VFW, gore. So
gore, there you go. Bit of gore going on here too.
All right. Well, what about you? That's Alice. What have you been watching during lockdown? We find out in a segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Adelaide Spence, who said, because I'm that bitch, I'm just going to give all out my 10. Number 10, The Wandering Earth. A pretty terrible Chinese disaster film.
Double.
9, Ocean 13. 8, Dungle. Man, I like Dungle. 7, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. 6, Hairspray. 5, Sideways, which I'll be doing with epic film guy Nick for an upcoming series of EFG, Nick and I.
Four. Oh, you're talking about Sideways?
Yeah. Interview with a Vampire. Three of the other guys. Damn. Two Superman Returns. Brackets. Fuck you, Paul. Close brackets.
Nice one.
Number two. Number one. The Muppets from 2011. Damn. Nicole Presley had The Girl with All the Gifts on Netflix. We found this during our End of the World / Apocalypse Movies due to the pandemic binge, and I was surprised to find out it was a zombie movie, which made it much more appealing to me. I'd always seen it and passed it by because I thought it was something completely different. Turns out I enjoyed it. It was a new take on zombies. I was fond of the child actor, and I liked We Eventually Got Answers. Not a huge fan of the ending, but hey, at least it was unique. And I would echo everything that Nicole said there. It's worth a watch, that particular film, The Girl with All the Gifts. Joshua Ragland said, onward, Pixar tells a great story. The mythical setting was very entertaining. As someone who lost dad at a very early age, that part of the story really hit home. Voice talent was standard. Not an all-time classic Pixar movie, but very good and highly recommended. So there you go.
Okay, on Paul's list too. Good.
Yep. Jon Snow, i.e. Julio from The Contrarian, said, Weekend at Bernie's holds up.
You know what? I don't doubt it. Andrew McCarthy did some good work.
Yeah. Hendo from the Movie Journey podcast said the rhythm section 1.5 out of 5.
Oh, I almost watched that one.
I wanted to see this, less so now, because incoherent and boring with so many instances where the movie is begging you to stretch your believability to the point where it snaps. Lively is good in her role, but everything else around her is just nothing. The movie could have been under 90 minutes, and if you take out all the long pauses and staring, hard pass.
Damn. Mm.
Speaking of damn, Dan Brennick. That's your new name, Dan. True Lies. It's funny, but it's super 90s, and I'm not one who's seen it before, so there's no nostalgia to hold my hand on as it went.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Hurtful. Billy Dunham said, guess I'm also the bitch, and here's his, from the Bewatch Think Poppy ass, and here's his top 10. What Lies Beneath? Trolls. Basketball. Onward. Downhill. 10 Things I Hate About You. Number 4, Impractical Jokers, the movie. Number 3, Not Another Teen Movie. Number 2, Ex Machina. And number 1, Throne of Blood, the Akira Kurosawa film. And they're all 6 out of 10 or more. So Billy is clearly better at life choices than
all
you
all kinds of ways.
Mm. Judy Dutrum said, Blade Runner 2049, pretty good. Great score, character development, and cinematography, but fucking long. My joke was, that was how you would refer to your penis.
Uh-huh. No, I would think a penis joke would be in there somewhere.
Kristen Akaro said, Underwater, an action thriller sci-fi with mysterious sea aliens. On my list, didn't quite get to it this week. Cinematography wasn't spectacular, and it's not breaking any new grounds. It kicks off right from the get-go. A solid effort from Will Eubanks, directorial debut in big-budget Hollywood. So, there you go. And Kristen Stewart's in it again. All right.
Oh, nice.
Last couple then. Joe Ketchum from the Word Salad podcast said, The Farewell was gorgeous.
What is that?
It's a film about an American Asian woman called home to her country because her grandmother is dying for a family sort of gathering, but no one's telling the grandmother she's dying. So they've got that news and they're keeping it from her.
Oh, okay, cool. So it's drama.
Pretty heartfelt, I think. And lastly, from Joy DiCarlo from the So Wizard podcast, top 3, The Hunt, a shockingly fun movie I expected to be ass. So there you go. Not that dissimilar from mine.
I also expected to be ass.
Number 2, Chopped on Food Network, the best background noise show on Hulu with 30 plus seasons to keep you busy. Okay. What We Do in the Shadows on FX/Hulu. Absolutely hilarious. I believe season 2 has just dropped, or at least the first episode of it has. So I'm looking forward to that
one.
What
I saw was good of that, yes.
As well. Yeah, good show. I think I made you watch it and you were kind of vibing it, but obviously not enough.
It was good.
All right.
No, but it was still good.
All right, that's your feedback on the topic at hand. Wayne, how do the listeners let us know their feedback for weeks coming up?
Google The Countdown Podcast and find us on the social media, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at TheCountdownPC. You can hit us up via email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on podbean.com and leave comments there. And lastly, the Facebook listening community link is in the show notes. Wayne, what's happening this week for episode 265 of The Countdown?
Next week, we're going to try something different. This came from one of our compadres, Troy.
From the CC Radio Network.
CC Radio Network. He just recommended that we do a thing where we take a decade, all right, from maybe the 80s till now, and we take the best movie of each year of that decade, put that shit into a list, okay? So we haven't thought of a good name for it yet.
No, we haven't, and Troy acknowledged that. And so Troy from the Great Mates podcast, we would say, first of all, when you said that and we said I had a conversation about it, here was our basic reaction.
Yeah!
Okay, it's been a while. So yeah, we'll come up with that name, but that's the thing we're going to do next week.
And we're going to do what decade, Wayne? Wayne picked the decade. We thought,
let's go with the 90s.
90s, he wants to do. So we're going to do the best film of each year from the 90s, 90 to 99, and present it in a list, according to us, obviously. And then yes. God forbid we need to come up with a good name for this, because I need to ask the people, gonna be the tough, listeners, yeah, about their version of the same.
You got a name for us? Just throw us up here, people.
Yeah, if you can work out what we should call it, hit us up in the Facebook listening community or via Twitter during the week, and we may well run with your suggestion because we are batting zero right about now.
We're sitting there going, what are we going to call it? I don't know. Anyway, any ideas, hit them up. All right.
That is it for today's episode 264 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been, of course, The Soundboard. I was directing that at you, Wayne, and then you told me to fuck off. How dare you, sir.
You can't handle the truth.
This is true.
We'll catch you next week.
See you again.